Welcome to the Neurobiopsy Podcast. I'm Audrey. This is a podcast where you will learn one type of neurological disease per episode, and it will be in alphabetical order. I will talk about its history as well as the cause and mechanism, and end it with the key cell or tissue that has been extracted for today's podcast biopsy. So, we are starting with the letter A, and I guess the first neurological disorder that has come to your mind might be Alzheimer's disease. In fact, that's correct. Today, I would like to talk about one of the most common types of dementia across the United States, Alzheimer's disease. I'm super excited to talk about Alzheimer's disease because it's so ubiquitous, and people have a lot of questions and misunderstanding on Alzheimer's. So I want to start off today's episode by debunking some common myths about this kind of disease. First and foremost, Alzheimer's and dementia are not the same thing. I noticed many people around me thought so, and they used these two words interchangeably. But in fact, Alzheimer's is one type of dementia, and dementia describes the condition of memory impairment and learning or thinking deficits. Although Alzheimer's is dementia, dementia is not, N-O-T, just Alzheimer's. It includes other types of dementia as well. For instance, we got vascular dementia. It's actually the second most common dementia after Alzheimer's, and it is caused by damage or insufficient blood supply to the brain, which basically kills the neurons. Another type of dementia is Lewy body dementia, and this dementia shares symptoms similar to Parkinson's, and it is caused by abnormal protein buildup. It's kind of like the cause of Alzheimer's, which we will discuss later in today's episode as well. In short, Alzheimer's and dementia are fairly different, and you will learn more about dementias in future episodes. Another common misunderstanding is that only elders at the age of 60 or 70 would get Alzheimer's. Well, that's not entirely correct. Age is one of the factors of getting Alzheimer's, but that's not the only one. There are actually people who have early onset Alzheimer's, which basically means they develop Alzheimer's in the age range of their 30s to 60s. It is very rare though, since very few people actually get diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. The last myth I want to talk about is that if the parents have Alzheimer's, then their children would get Alzheimer's as well. And the chance of someone getting Alzheimer's will be higher if they inherited certain genes or genetic mutations from the parents. But again, genetics are just one factor of the development of Alzheimer's. It develops from various factors, including your lifestyle, environment, age, and other risk factors. So it is definitely more important to practice a better and healthier lifestyle than worrying about getting Alzheimer's from a relative. Well, I hope this has cleared some of your questions or concerns about Alzheimer's disease, which we will call it AD later, when it first came to your mind. To be honest, when we discuss a certain type of disease, we rarely ask where this disease came from or how it happened. So that's why I would like to bring you back into the history of Alzheimer's. The concept of dementia has actually been discovered by humans even before it was officially named. Ancient Egyptians learned that people's memory would decline when they grew older 2,000 years before Christ. A very famous Greek philosopher called Plato also believed that the condition of dementia is naturally caused by age. Even William Shakespeare had written King Lear describing dementia symptoms. So now I'm wondering exactly how Alzheimer's disease had been discovered and named by scientists. Well, back in the late 1890s, a 50-year-old woman named Augusta Dieter noticed herself having memory issues and uncontrollable behavior. She was unable to do housework and had serious problems in writing or learning. She has also experienced insomnia and cried at midnight. As her condition worsened, she would sometimes threaten her neighbors with a shriek. Once she even dragged her bedsheet and left her house wandering. All these situations finally led her husband to bring her to the hospital, and at there she met Dr. Alois Alzheimer's. Dr. Alzheimer's was a psychiatrist in his late 30s. He was very committed to understanding the relationship between neurological diseases and mental illness. Augusta Dieter entered the Frankfurt Mental Hospital, and she became Dr. Alzheimer's patient. She was 51 years old at that time. Her symptoms were intensifying. When Dieter was asked what kind of food she ate, she replied that she was eating spinach, though in fact she had pork and cauliflower. So to speak, I lost myself. This is what she said over and over when she tries to answer Alzheimer's question. Later in 1903, Alzheimer moved to a Munich hospital and worked under Dr. Emil Kraepelin, who was an impactful psychiatrist at that time. Augusta Dieter died in 1906 at the age of 55. Her brain tissues were sent to Munich, and Alzheimer conducted a biopsy of her brain immediately. The examination revealed the presence of amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles, which were thought to be the major pathological causes of AD. He made a presentation that connected this brain pathology to a clinical syndrome. Although the scientists at that time did not really pay attention to Alzheimer's presentation, later investigation in the field showed that the plaques and tangles were indeed present in the brains of the majority of older adults with symptoms of dementia, and more neuroscientists began to research on this new type of disease, as what we call it now, Alzheimer's disease. Now that we've talked about the broad picture of the history of Alzheimer's and dementia, I want to zoom into the details of what the underlying mechanism is. So before actually getting into all the sciencey stuff, I just want to go through some basic terminology that will be mentioned when we talk about the mechanism itself. It's super exciting, isn't it? Okay, so here we have a neuron. It has a cell body with the nucleus, which contains genetic information. We also got dendrites that branch out from the cell body and collect other neuronal information. Then there's the axon, which is the structure at the end of the cell body that transmits information to other neurons. Besides neurons, which are fairly important in the central nervous system, there are also glial cells that support the regular function of neurons. They protect neurons from damage and clear substances from the outside. These information is important to keep in mind as we go on. Now we are finally prepared to start talking about the most exciting part. What causes Alzheimer's and how does AD affect our brain? So the shorter version is that there is this widespread damage that causes neurons to lose their function and they stop working. The neurons could not effectively carry out synaptic communication and they would die. This can be seen in the significant shrinking of the brain of an Alzheimer's disease patient. There are many hypotheses on the exact cause of the disease, and researchers have found various factors and changes in the brain that might lead to the development. However, in today's podcast, I'm only going to focus on the two major changes, which are amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. In Alzheimer's, there is this beta amyloid protein that basically accumulates between neurons. These small beta amyloid proteins are formed from the breakdown of a larger amyloid precursor protein. Generally, these proteins forming occur on a natural level, but if it goes beyond to an abnormal level of protein buildup, they start forming plaques, and it begins to disrupt the cell function. So you can imagine there is this huge clump of proteins blocking the path of neuronal communication between neurons, and if the message from one neuron is not sent to the other, then it starts damaging the brain. Modern clinical research has been working on targeting the amyloid deposition, and it was found that the plaques precede clinical symptoms. We learned that the early detection of amyloid deposition is an important aspect of intervention in AD. Thus, amyloid imaging has been developed to diagnose in order to intervene in Alzheimer's. This is actually very exciting, in which clinicians might be able to use this tool to even confirm AD pathologies in patients with symptoms. Researchers used a compound called Pittsburgh Compound B to work as a ligand. So, a ligand is basically a signaling molecule that would trigger cellular responses, in this case, in the brain. They used this compound B to detect any amyloid deposition in AD patients, but it has a very short half-life and certain other limitations, so this also led to the development of new ligands. But we won't expand on that in this episode, maybe in the future. Here we actually got a case reported by the NIH where a patient who is 37 years old was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's disease by this beta amyloid imaging. In this case, the male patient works as an industrial researcher who came to the clinic complaining about gradual cognitive decline. He was not able to perform calculation tasks, and his symptoms of forgetting caused him to quit several jobs. Sleep disturbance and apathy also occurred to him. And similar to Auguste Deter, which we have talked about earlier, he would wake up at midnight and talk to himself. When he came to the clinic, they did an amyloid positron emission tomography imaging on him, and it revealed that there was diffusion of amyloid deposition in the striatum. However, although beta amyloid imaging was applied for the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, it is important to note that there are still limitations in using this tool, and researchers still need to validate it for future application. Now, I also want to talk about this other hallmark of Alzheimer's disease, neurofibrillary tangles, which are a different kind of abnormal aggregation of proteins. In this case, we have the protein tau, TAU. Similar to the amyloid plaques, tau proteins accumulate and collect inside neurons. I want to point out that healthy neurons in our brain do in fact have tau proteins binding to microtubules, which are cellular structure or pathways that guide substances from the neuronal cell body to axon or dendrites. The tau protein stabilizes the microtubules. In an Alzheimer's brain, however, tau is going to detach from microtubules and find its other tau friends to form neurofibrillary tangles inside neurons. So, this damages synaptic communication in the brain as well, which again leads to brain impairment. A 68-year-old patient A came to the neurologist with concerns from his wife about difficulties in verbal communication for the last 4 years. Patient A was still able to handle chores and finances, but he had to ask his wife for instruction gradually. Although he did realize there was short-term memory loss occurring to him, overall, there was not that big of a change in this patient's behavior or personality. 3 years later, patient A had more unexplained falls and suffered from agitation. He became disoriented and broke his hip 5 years later. With fever and infection coming along with the hip replacement, he died in a month. Through neuropathological examination after the death of patient A, an autopsy confirmed that the patient did have Alzheimer's disease. It revealed that there was atrophy or brain shrinkage, but most regions of the brain were normal. However, after staining, neurofibrillary tangles came into play, and they were visible under a light microscope. We can see these tangles as twisted and paired helical filaments inside of neurons. So basically, we can see amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles almost in, well, I don't know if it's in all cases, but at least the majority of cases of Alzheimer's disease. If we want to develop a treatment for AD, we gotta find medicine that targets these hallmarks. The first strategy researchers came up with is targeting the amyloid plaques. These include using drugs that might prevent the proteins from clumping to plaques or even removing these plaques. The drugs are called monoclonal antibodies, as they appear to look similar to a body-produced antibodies from the immune system. Other research focused on strategies to reduce the amount of amyloid proteins forming in the brain by inhibiting activity of the enzymes that actually produce these type of proteins. Similarly, we got researchers who looked at the tau proteins, and they looked for ways to prevent tau from forming neurofibrillary tangles by using drugs. I know many people may be concerned about this disease, but my piece of advice would just be stay physically active and practice a healthy diet. One should always talk to a neurologist if they are indeed experiencing memory loss. To sum it up, we examined amyloid and tau in the frontal cortex for today's episode's biopsy. We talked about Auguste Deter and Alois Alzheimer. Also, don't forget the two major causes of Alzheimer's disease, the plaques and tangles, as well as the future treatment on it. I think that's all I have for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Make sure to rate the view and subscribe to my podcast. You can find future episodes on Spotify. Thanks again for listening. Bye!